Occupied Territory with Mike Fader, Wednesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Progressive Radio Network.
And this is Mike Fader with Occupied Territory. We have a guest coming on later at 1:30. There's a new program debuting here on PRN. It'll be tomorrow night, Thursday, at 7 p.m., 7 to 8. And it's called Occupy the Hood. And we're going to talk to the founder and co-host of the program, founder of Occupy the Hood and co-host of the program. He'll be on later on in this program. Right now, what I want to do is, you know, it's the middle of the winter. I keep saying this. Everything is sort of faded down and retreated. Occupy Wall Street is telling people that they, you know, they don't have much money left in the bank there or wherever they put the money. I don't know, in a sock or under the mattress. But so things seem to be in eclipse, and it's naturally that way. However, it is going strong, and there are things going on all over the place. Occupy Congress, occupy the Supreme Court. And there was something the other day on Martin Luther King's birthday, Occupy Harlem. And we're going to talk to our guest later about what he's got up his sleeve. But I just want to keep reminding people, that's sort of what I want this program to do, is to constantly remind people of why we need an Occupy movement. Because we've been through this already, but there is no political party that represents anybody anymore that means anything. So Republicans, forget about it. The Democrats, maybe there's five people in all of Congress who can call themselves Democrats that I could possibly recommend that actually do try to represent all of us. Kucinich, Sanders, a handful of other people. The rest of them basically are just puppets of Wall Street. And when it comes to third parties, it's interesting people are talking about Ron Paul a lot. And he does have an appeal. The man has an appeal, crazy old coot. And it's his anti-war stance that appeals to people like me. I'm sure it appeals to a lot of the people in the country who understand that we shouldn't be doing this. Now, I'm not sure that Ron Paul is against wars for moral reasons so much, but he may be. I heard him the other night in one of those debates, one of those endless debates, and he seemed to be expressing the point of view that we are antagonizing and provoking other people. But for him, it's all very practical. It's all very bottom line. He's very scientific. He's a doctor, you know. And I don't think he so objects to the fact that we've invaded and occupied half the world and we're murdering people by the scores every single day. And we've killed, you know, hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of thousands of people over the last 20 years, perfectly innocent people. Some people aren't so innocent, but we've killed a lot of people in places we don't belong, that we murder people with our drones, that we occupy countries, we corrupt whole countries. I don't think that bothers him for moral reasons. I think Mr. Paul, The old, you know, codger, I think what bothers him is it's the money. And, okay, if that's what it takes, he's the only one up on that stage at those primaries that seems to be saying something intelligent. In other words, if you want to save money, if you want to have money available for other things, he doesn't want government to get involved in anything. However, if you want to eliminate the debt and so that we don't all have to keep paying on the debt all the time, and maybe our taxes could be lowered or whatever, you've got to stop all these wars. You've got to cut the military down by about 90%. You don't need it. You obviously don't need it. Now we've got robots murdering people from all over the place and from space and everywhere else. Who needs an army? But God forbid, what happens to the weapons manufacturers and all the politicians they support? So just to make a round turn, a lot of people, I noticed, you know, I read articles about the Occupy movement all the time, and I check in with various sites of Occupy groups and call some people. Some of them are worried about being co-opted. First, it was by the Democrats. I don't think there's any danger of that. The Democrats are so obviously no different than the Republicans. As you could see clearly, if you watched the State of the Union message last night, you had President Obama saying all the right things to everybody to get elected, acting tough, wrapping the flag around himself, pretending he's actually a soldier boy, you know, when he's never been anything close to it, and honoring the soldiers and saluting the soldiers and their brave sacrifice and our heroes and all that bullshit. There's nothing brave about our heroes over there. They're brave, yeah. They're getting shot at and they're shooting other people and their lives are at risk. I suppose that's brave, but they don't belong there. There's no moral or ethical or logical or strategic or military reason for them to be there. There's not even a political reason for them to be there. They're there for somebody else's greater glory, for their officers' greater glory, because they got nothing else to do, because there's nothing else in America to do. Our biggest They're talking about creating jobs all the time. What will happen if we do disband our army? You're talking about millions, millions of people suddenly without jobs. What is supposed to happen to them? This is a big industry. This is where a lot of the jobs are. America's major manufacturing product. What do we produce more than? We are number one. They're always worried about who's number. Are we number one in the world? Why? Why do we worry about being number one? Who cares if America's number one? But we are number one in some respects. We are the number one terrorizing force in the world. People are more scared of us than anybody else. And we are the biggest empire now in the world. And we are the largest arms dealers in the world. No one comes close to the United States in being the number one arms dealers in the whole world. We eclipse everyone. No one kills people as well as we do. So that's something we could say, that we are still number one if we need to be number one. Meanwhile, the president gets up there, and the bottom line with Occupy Wall Street is the bottom line, that there are 1%, and that's a handy phrase, but there's a handful of rich people at the top of American society, and they own and they run our government and everything else that goes on. They cheat us. They steal from us. They lie to us. They pass laws to help themselves. Look at Romney. I mean, it's astounding. Last year, I keep forgetting the figures because they're so astounding to me. Last year, he finally files his tax returns, this son of a bitch. Last year, he and his wife, I forget about this, he makes $21 million for the year 2010. $21 million in interest and deferred payments. He didn't even work to get that money. The man did not even lift anything. He didn't make anything. He didn't create anything. He is a giant leech on the back of the neck of the American Republic, sucking our blood. And he got $21 million, and he paid 13.9% taxes. Let me say that again. Mitt Romney, without doing any work whatsoever on interest payments on investments, some of which came from the Cayman Islands and from Swiss banks, and also deferred payments on investments that he made years ago at Bain Capital, the man makes $21 million in 1 year and pays 13.9% taxes. How much do you pay in taxes? When you get your paycheck, how much do they take out of your taxes? You make $20,000 a year. You get Social Security. Maybe you make $15,000 a year. Maybe you make $40,000, $80,000. Whatever you make, you know they're taking 20, 25, 30, 35, 38% out of your taxes. Bang, just like that. And there's not a damn thing you can do about it. And they fight their wars, and they bribe each other, and they're corrupt all over the place, and they give away money to Wall Street with your taxes. And you can't do anything about it. And you work hard, I'm sure. You know, some of you don't work hard. Some of you work a little bit. Some of you work a lot. But most of you work hard or have worked hard, or you're retired from working hard. And you go there every day, and you do a job. Maybe you don't love your job. Maybe you like your job. But you do a hard job. You work hard. It's hard to be there. It's hard to conform to those standards. It's hard to turn out what you need. It's hard to produce what you're asked to produce. Jobs can be very hard. They can be boring. They can be overwhelming. Some people do jobs that are very essential. They're teachers. They're doctors, nurses, whatever it is. You go to work and you do your job, and a tremendous amount of money is taken out of your salary. $21 million, 13.9%, and it's all quote-unquote legal. He didn't do anything illegal. Well, of course it's not illegal, because him and his rich pals make the laws. That's why it's not illegal. He could murder people, and if they passed a bill allowing people who make over $20 million to murder people without being arrested, then it would be legal. Slavery was legal once. Anything could be legal if your rich pals pass a law and make it legal. So this son of a bitch, this pig, this parasite who's running for president of the United States and could be president of the United States, it's always a possibility, unless Gingrich actually one day walks up to him on stage and eats him. I always had the feeling that Gingrich was going to grab a knife and a fork and put a little napkin around his neck and go over and like slice him up and eat him on stage. But and the State of the Union, the president gets up there last night, and he, I forgot to mention in all my zeal here about the Occupy movement, there is a call number here. If you want to call us up at any time, I'll be happy to take your calls. The number is 888-874-4888. 888-874-4888. And if you act now, You get absolutely nothing, but you get the pleasure of speaking on the radio. Also, you can tweet us here at PRN underscore radio, at PRN underscore radio. And I really wish you would check out our Facebook page, Occupied Territory Facebook page. The way to do that is go to PRN FM, find Occupied Territory, and just go to the archives. You'll find ways to get into the Facebook page there. So the president's on there last night, and he's... You know, he's touching all the bases, right? He's speaking to his, you know, he will not tolerate this and he won't tolerate that. And then the big tip-off comes on Wall Street when it comes to the money. He says, and I am appointing a commission, a special, no, this time it's even, he's going to be even more strong, right? I'm appointing a special investigative unit in the Justice Department made up of attorney generals from the states and the Justice Department to go after those Wall Street people. Yeah, bullshit. That will be the day. Let me tell you what the secret is, as if you don't already know it, right? The secret to watch out for is if he says he's going to appoint a commission or he's going to establish a special unit, that is code for nothing is ever going to happen. You know it. You've been listening to these people say the same things for a long time. As soon as they appoint a commission or as soon as they establish a special unit, that means that they're not going to do a damn thing about it. And why do we... And he, so last night he's saying... It's going to delight all his liberal people who don't like him anymore. And he says, we're going to appoint a special unit to go after the bankers and the mortgage, you know, thieves and everything. Yeah, well, that'll be the day. That's never going to happen. And this shameful wrapping himself in the flag, and he's honored and proud to have murdered Osama bin Laden. Good, I'm glad the guy's dead. He was a psychopathic murderer, killed Americans. He hit his planes, hit five blocks where my son was going to school. If the plane missed the target, it could have hit my son's school. So he's dead. He's a murderer. He's dead. They got him. Good for him. That is the crowning achievement, as far as he's concerned, of his entire life. Really, what he wants to do is put on a uniform and, you know, ride around in helicopters and shoot people. I mean, he would make him feel like a real man, I guess. I don't know. That's a real problem for the guy, but... He loves to have those generals. You know, he likes to be in a room with the generals and watch them launch their missiles. And he likes to sit there and, watch them with the uniforms on. He probably has more sexual interest in them than he does in his wife. So anyhow, President Barack Obama. So what does he do? So he's up there last night. He's telling the whole American public in firm, aggressive tones that he's not going to put up with this Wall Street thieving anymore. That people need a fair shake. We all need to have a level playing field. And when he's not going to let people get away with all this tax cheating anymore. And Wall Street can't get away with this kind of stuff anymore. But let's just come down to earth here and understand who we're listening to. This is a guy who makes wonderful speeches and does nothing else except help rich people. Really, he doesn't. And yeah, he appointed a couple of good Supreme Court justices. His credit where credit is due. He's kept Guantanamo open. He's gone after whistleblowers worse than anybody else. He's not protecting Medicare and Social Security like he should. He's given away presents to the healthcare industry. And what's more telling than anything else is, and this is what makes him such a hypocrite, he's up there talking about, you know, Wall Street can't get away with this and rich people have to pay their fair share. 2 weeks ago, there was an announcement that they made at the White House. President Barack Obama, this is from Common Dreams, a great website called Common Dreams. President Barack Obama just replaced outgoing Chief of Staff Bill Daley with Jack Lew, formerly of Citigroup. Now, the Chief of Staff of the President is like an assistant president. You know, it's not vice president. This is a very powerful position. It's who has access to him. He gives him his opinion. He leans on his advice to the president. This is a powerful position. It's like associate president. So Bill Daley is gone now, and Jack Lew, L-E-W, is in there. And the story behind it is, now Jack Lew, where is Jack Lew from? Is Jack Lew from the environmental movement? Is Jack Lew from the liberal wing of the Democratic Party? Is Jack Lew from a think tank, from an anti-nuclear place, whatever? Where is Jack Lew from? He's from Citigroup. The president just appointed his chief associate and advisor from Citigroup. The story behind it is that Jack Lew is President Obama's new chief of staff, arguably the most powerful office in the White House that isn't shaped like an oval. He used to work for the giant banking conglomerate Citigroup. His predecessor as chief of staff, the guy that retired, is Bill Daley, who used to work at the giant banking conglomerate J.P. Morgan Chase, where he was maestro of the bank's global lobbying and chief liaison to the White House. That's who the president has friend. That's who his closest friends are. That's who his closest advisors are. So whatever you heard that man say last night had anything to do with money or banks or Wall Street, he was lying to your face, and you're a sap to believe it. So Daley replaced Obama's first chief of staff, Rahm Emanuel, who once worked as a rainmaker for the investment bank now known as Wasserstein & Company, where in less than 3 years he was paid a reported $18.5 million, probably paid 2% tax on it. The new guy, Jack Lew, said by those who know him to be a skilled and principled public servant, ran hedge funds and private equity at Citigroup, which means he's a member of the Wall Street gang, too. His last job was head of the President Obama's Office of Management and Budget. And he replaced Peter Orszag at that job, who now works as vice chairman for global banking at Citigroup. This is the revolving door, and the president is right in the middle of it. They own him. They own him. He wants to be them. They are him. It's startling the number of high-ranking Obama officials who have spun through the revolving door between the White House and the sacred halls of investment banking. Sure, you can argue that it makes sense that the chief executive of the nation would look to other executives for the expertise you need to build back from the disastrous collapse of the banks in the final year of the Bush administration. But Bush and Cheney ones aren't. It talks about Bush and Cheney here. Paulson was the guy who, frightened the wits out of the whole country and gave $700 million or else we're all going to die to Goldman Sachs, where he was the former chairman of Goldman Sachs. And as his successor at Goldman Sachs, Paulson chose Lloyd Blankfein. Several times, according to Bloomberg News, Rolling Stone, and Paulson's own memoir, the Treasury Secretary made sure Blankfein and Goldman got privileged inside information. Bush and Cheney aren't the only ones to have soft spots for financiers. President Obama may call bankers fat cats and stir the rabble against them with populist rhetoric when it comes to his interests and getting reelected. But after the fiscal fiasco, he allowed the culprits to escape virtually scot-free. When he's in New York, he dines with them frequently and eagerly accepts their big contributions. Like his predecessors, his administration has also provided them with billions of taxpayer dollars, low-cost money that they use for high-yielding investments, the big, big profits. It was under Obama that the Fed gave trillions of dollars in secret to these banks at a ridiculously low percentage rate, and they make an incredible profit on the rest of us. What do they pay you on your interest account? 0.9%. And their loan money, it's something like a fifth of that. The largest banks are bigger under Obama than they were when he took office and earned more in the first 2.5 years of Obama's term than they did during the entire 8 years of the Bush administration. That's confirmed by industry data. And get this. It turns out, according to the New York Times, that as President Obama's inner circle has been shrinking, his rare new best friend is Robert Wolf. They play basketball, golf, and talk economics when Wolf is not raising money for the president's campaign. So who's Robert Wolf? Is he work with Greenpeace? Is he the president of an alternative energy company? Is he working with, Ban the Pipeline Group? Robert Wolf runs the U.S. branch of the giant Swiss bank UBS, which participated in schemes to help rich Americans evade their taxes, including Mitt Romney. During hearings in 2009, Michigan Senator Carl Levin, chairman of the Permanent Subcommittee on Investigations, described some of the tricks used by UBS. Swiss bankers aided and abetted violations of U.S. tax law by traveling to this country with client code names, encrypted computers, counter-surveillance training, and all the rest of it to enable U.S. residents to hide assets and money in Swiss accounts. The bankers then returned to Switzerland and treated their conduct as blameless since Swiss law says tax evasion is no crime. That's why Romney's got a lot of his money over there. The Swiss bank before us deliberately, that is UBS, deliberately entered the United States, actively sought U.S. clients, and secretly helped those U.S. clients defraud the United States of America. That's Obama's new best friend, Robert Wolf. Okay? So forget about Obama. The man likes killing people, I guess, and he likes cheating people because that's who his best friends are. So all that stuff he said last night with his firm jaw and all the things he was going to do to people, and he will not do this, and he will not put up with that. He's one of them, believe me, which is why we need the Occupy movement. There's so much else to catch up on, but this thing about Romney, I'm sure it makes everybody sick with, sick to your stomach. Yeah, it's legal. According to the laws that he and his rich friends in Congress and the people that he and his rich friends own in Congress, i.e. the senators and the Congress people and the Supreme Court and the president, they pass laws that benefit themselves. So Romney earned something means you actually tried hard and you got a reward. You earned it. He didn't earn it, but he got $21 million in 1 year, paid 13.9% of his income in federal taxes. That's how it goes, and that's the way it is right now, and the president is just a fixture of this. It doesn't matter what he says. He's full of it. He doesn't mean a word of it, because he just recently, 10 days ago, appointed a former high executive at Citibank to be his closest advisor. So that's what Obama's all about. Meanwhile, hopeful news out there is that the Koch brothers' puppet governor, Scott Walker, and the puppet legislature in Wisconsin that the Koch brothers bought and paid for are in a lot of trouble. Over 1 million signatures were put onto a recall petition, out in Wisconsin over the last couple of months, and they were filed in the state government. So Scott Walker and several of the worst legislators in Congress and the lieutenant in the state assembly at Wisconsin and the lieutenant governor, who was also a right-wing, hireling of the Koch brothers, these people who work exclusively for rich people and their whole job in life is to deprive what little is left, poor people and middle-class people, what little is left that they have. Their whole job in life is to do this. They are in a lot of trouble, and they may have to run for your re-election. I don't know if it's in April or May, but it's going to be a re-election. Already, millions and millions of dollars are pouring in from, quote-unquote, out-of-state sources. 33 people gave several million dollars in the last several days. And over the last 5 weeks, something like $7 million has come in only about a month's time from no more than 33 rich people, some of whom have to be the Koch brothers and other people like that, have poured money into Wisconsin because they want to use this state, like Indiana and Ohio, as test states to make sure that nobody has a union, nobody gets a minimum wage, nobody has a right to complain, that there are no agencies that investigate employer abuses, and that taxes are never imposed on the rich. So Scott Walker, who is the worst puppet in the United States, the governor of Wisconsin, is in trouble now. So this is good news, and we can only look forward to that. And I wanted to also announced that if you're in the Madison area, you know anybody who's in Madison, there's going to be a complaint, and there's going to be a gathering over there about they're having a bill to pass, and the bill there, the Koch brothers legislature is passing a bill to help some gigantic coal mining and it's a gigantic coal mining company. They're going to carve out special, it's an iron ore mining company, too. They're going to carve out like a whole mountain, and just dump it in northern Wisconsin. And they're hiding the fact that they're doing it. They're having hearings in secret, and they're trying to get away with this. But if you're in Wisconsin and you want to go to Madison, as far as occupying places and standing in, this is a way to protest this iron ore mine and some of the coal mines that are going with it. It's the People's State of the State hearing on Wednesday, January 25th, 2012, 10 a.m. until 5 p.m., the second floor. That's Wednesday, January 25th, 2012, 10 a.m. till 5 p.m. on the second floor, the North Hearing Room. That's in the state legislature, state capitol. Citizens will be given the opportunity to testify and give their own opinions about the state of the state of Wisconsin, including this mining bill, which is going to cause tremendous damage to hundreds of square miles. It's going to poison the earth, poison the water, and it's going to make a few people rich and a lot of other people really sick. And there's also a Bury the Mining Bill protest rally Wednesday, January 25th at 5 to 7 p.m. at Lady Forward, top of State Street, Capitol Square, Madison, Wisconsin. And just check it out online. Check out Madison, Wisconsin, and the Iron Ore protest, and Occupy Madison, Occupy, you know, Wall Street. We'll send you a link to that, too. So you can show up out there to protest in the legislature. And hopefully, comes April or May, people will turn out and occupy the state building the way they did in Madison last January, before this one, and show these rich people that they don't actually own yet every square inch of property in the country. They don't own every square inch of government, you know, in the country, and that they don't own us all. There's still time to do this before they actually impose their total fascist corporate state. So that's what's happening, basically, and there's a lot more going on. One thing I wanted to mention before we go to an interview we have scheduled in a couple of minutes, and I mentioned this last week, but one of the best books I've read recently, and all of this has to do, of course, with the money in politics, has to do with Citizens United, this outrageous thing that was passed by the Supreme Court. The best book on this that's come out yet, it's beautifully written, beautifully researched. It's written by a lawyer who knows the history of these things, a guy who is a former associate or assistant attorney general in Massachusetts who went after corporate crime, a man named Jeffrey D. Clements. Now, listen to this. I'd like all of you to read this book. This is the best book on Citizens United and why it shouldn't exist and how to overturn the Citizens United decision. And basically, it's by a constitutional amendment. Because the legislatures are never going to pay, are never going to overturn this. Why? Because they work for the same people the Supreme Court works for. So it's a constitutional amendment, essentially, is what we're talking about. The best book on this, and it's by Jeffrey D. Clements, C-L-E-M-E-N-T-S, Jeffrey D. Clements, and it's called Corporations Are Not People. Corporations Are Not People. Why they have more rights than you do, and what you can do about it, with a foreword by Bill Moyers. And this is not a large book. It's about 160, 170 pages. It's got all the history of the Supreme Court and their attitude towards corporations. It's got the founders' attitude towards corporations, which were very bad. Jefferson, Madison, all those people distrusted corporations intensely. And it explains to you legally and historically and ethically, not just morally from your gut, but legally and historically and spiritually and ethically, why corporations shouldn't have the rights that they demand to have all the time, and all this stuff they get away with Citizens United, why PACs are immoral and illegal. Of course, we understand that, but he really explains it in great depth, and he gives you the entire history of the Supreme Court and corporations and Congress and corporations, and it's a wonderful book. He's also a terrific writer, very passionate. Jeffrey D. Clements, Corporations Are Not People. Why they have more rights than you do and what you can do about it. I'm going to interview him on Sirius, on my Sirius show, this coming Saturday night at 6 p.m. Eastern. That's Sirius XM Left 127, and Jeffrey D. Clements will be on. And check out in Madison, Wisconsin, where people seem to know finally, I don't understand how this government got elected in the first place, but it looks like they're on their way out. I hope they are. So if outside money is coming into Wisconsin, this is important. If outside money is pouring in from millionaires, which it is in Wisconsin, to bolster Scott Walker's re-campaign to keep his job, and their Neanderthal legislature, which hates working people, to keep their jobs, then we have to send whatever money we can. We got $10. You got $10, $20, $30, $50. Send it. Identify the Democratic Party who's running against them. Scott Walker and the Republicans in Wisconsin, identify where they are, who they are, and check out whatever campaign you want, or donate to Occupy Madison. Make the money go to Wisconsin. This is a laser-like focal point for what's going on here right now, and this election will take place sometime in the spring. Once again, you're listening to Occupied Territory with Mike Fader. And again, check out our Facebook page. Go on to go to prn.fm. That's our website for the whole radio station here. And then go to Occupied Territory page, and it'll tell you how to get onto the Facebook page. So there's more we can talk about here, but right now, I think maybe, do we have a guest? Oh, we're still looking for our guest? Okay. We're trying to connect to our guest. I will announce, in case we don't connect to him, that there's a brand new show about the Occupy movement called Occupy the Hood. This is a fairly recent organization that was formed, Occupy the Hood, and we're going to premiere its first new show here on PRN tomorrow. That is Thursday night at 7 p.m. It'll be from 7 to 8 p.m. Eastern. And, of course, you can listen on podcasts and on an archive. And it'll be co-hosted by Amitra Gaspar and Malik Rassan. And that is Thursday, 7 to 8 p.m. Again, here, if you want to call up, did you see the president's address last night? Were you roused by it? Did you feel like he was finally, you know, do you have this, like, secret hope that a lot of people do, or secret belief, because you still believe in fairy tales, like I once did when I voted for him, that he's going to, once he gets in office and he only gets one more term, then you'll see the real people's side of him, the liberal side of him, the part that favors the environment, that wants working people to succeed. Once he doesn't have to worry about the money anymore and pleasing his corporate sponsors, yes, absolutely. That's Virginia. There definitely is a Santa Claus. So if you saw him last night, maybe you want to call up, tell me what you thought of his speech. I thought it was despicable. Even though he said all the right things, he doesn't mean a word of it. And wrapping himself in the flag. And this constant insistence on us being number one. We don't have to be number one. One of the reasons why we've slipped to number 26 in education, intelligence quotient, whatever it is. One of the reasons why we're so behind so many other countries in so many areas of intellect, education, and ability. You may have noticed the other day that Apple announced that it had, through subcontractors and contractors and through its own employment practices, they had 700,000. Apple has close to 800,000 employees. 700,000 of them are in China. And when they asked the head of Apple, Steve Jobs said this one time straight out to President Obama, and they recently asked the new head of Apple, why is it that all your people are over there? He said, because they've got the education, they've got the willingness, they've got the knowledge, and they can turn everything around. And yes, the government controls labor over there. And so they put them in dormitories, gigantic cities. Of these factories over there aren't just little factories that people drive to work at or take the bus to work like in this country. They actually come and live there. There was pictures of women in a dormitory, 12 bunk beds in each room, and there are thousands of employees that live in this place. They go shopping in here. It's a walled or barbed wire city. They go shopping in there. They get paid practically nothing. They send some money home, but it's a job, and they're smart. They're willing to do things. For instance, at one point, Steve Jobs wanted to correct it. Jobs. Am I saying Jobs? Jobs. Steve Jobs wanted to correct a design flaw in the iPhone, and it was only 5 weeks to the rollout of the iPhone, and he wanted to correct a design flaw. He saw something he didn't like, and he's the perfectionist, right? In 5 weeks, he was able to notify his subcontractors in China. They organized shifts of people and recruited people and brought them into dormitories and had them working 24 hours a day in shifts and actually managed to turn the whole thing around, recall the other ones that had already been made, and ship the new ones in time to meet the deadline. Nobody here can do that kind of thing. Now, should we compete with stuff like that? I guess we should. And it's a question, right? If you believe in capitalism, I guess you have to say that anything goes. If the Chinese can organize people like that because they're all starving to death and have nothing else to do, and there's no jobs, and a lot of them are literally starving to death in China, they're willing to have a job. So they sleep in a dormitory, so they obey all the rules, so they shop where they're supposed to shop. They spend all their money right back in the company stores and everything else, and the government gets the profit and people get rich off them. But they can produce this stuff for something like a fifth or a tenth of what American workers can do it for. I don't know the answer to that. There's a point somewhere, there's a fuzzy point, and you can't really see it. James Jones once called something like this the thin red line between violence and between acting like a human being, and this happens during war. There's an invisible line between working hard in your life and letting other people work hard and reap the rewards of their hard work and actually helping people who are down and out. When you look at the Republican primaries, you'll see somebody like Ron Paul, who's in some ways the favorite of liberals or left-wingers because he's so anti-war. But when you get him on things like he wants the federal government out of everything. He wants to be no taxes. He doesn't want a flat tax or low tax for rich people. He wants no taxes. None. Zero. He wants no taxes. So his attitude is that the government should have nothing to do with health care whatsoever. Absolutely nothing to do. It shouldn't enforce rules for health insurance companies. It shouldn't make them do anything. It should stay out of anything that has to do with business or people's lives. So one of the moderators at one of these debates said to him, well, Congressman Paul, does that mean, let's say, somebody who's worked hard all their life and they have an accident or something, a hardworking guy makes $50,000 at a local car plant or an assembly plant. He has an accident, not his fault. Some idiot goes through a red light, hits him. He can't work. He loses his health insurance after a while, and he's got no place to go. He's got nothing. There's nothing he can do. He's going to have expensive treatments to fix his spleen or to give rehabilitation so he could walk again, so he could finally lead some kind of life, maybe get another job. And you're saying that the government should not require health insurance companies to give him any money, and there should be no Medicare. Ron Paul believes there should be no Medicare, no Medicaid, the government out of everything. Think twice before you think Ron Paul is so cool. Yeah, it's great, his attitude about the Army and the military, the Defense Department, getting them out of all our bases overseas, stop murdering people all over the place, stop provoking the Iranians. He's got the right attitude about all that. I'm for him on that. He wants to stop all the wars, all the invasions, and use the trillions of dollars we'd save on that by trying to be number one all the time to use that to pay down the debt. But what he doesn't want to use it for is, and this is something to watch out for him, this crazy old coot, is that he doesn't want anybody to get any help. So in other words, he doesn't want any federal agencies at all. No EPA, no FDA, nothing. So if he's a free market guy like all the rest of them. If big businesses like Monsanto and General Electric and all these other companies, if they want to poison the whole environment, and gigantic petroleum and natural gas drilling companies, Massey Energy, the coal company that where they broke so many rules that finally 28 people died in a mine collapse in Virginia, if he wants government out of everything, that means they will never interfere. So the whole country and the Gulf of Mexico and every one of us can get poisoned to death by these corporations. Watch out for Ron Paul. And there's a lot of people in the Occupy movement. They've inserted themselves into the Occupy movement, into lots of general assemblies and everything like that. Finally, it was no more than a few days ago that the moderator of the Occupy Wall Street online blog or debate thing that they have there outlawed people pushing a political candidate. They're not backing any political candidates, and that's an important thing. Anyhow, so there we have the State of the Union last night. And, I guess if you're middle of the road or the New York Times or CNN or all those other places or MSNBC, you say, strong speech, Chris. I thought that was a strong speech. He stood up for what was right. He put the ball in the court of Republicans. He didn't do anything like that. All he did was say the right thing. That was a re-election campaign speech by Obama. I don't like the man. I think he's a liar, and I think he's a tool of rich people. And I don't think when he gets his second term and doesn't need... You know who he doesn't need anymore? It's not that he doesn't need rich people anymore because he can't serve three terms. He doesn't need us anymore because he doesn't need our votes. That's who he won't need. You watch out. This is the same guy, for all his firmness and all his asserting that we all have to have a level playing field and we all have to have our rights, who signed, no more than 2 weeks ago, the National Defense Appropriations Act, which enables the United States military to patrol the streets of the cities and the towns of the United States of America, to operate within the bounds of the United States of America, to arrest people, just like they arrest people in other countries, for no reason whatsoever sometimes, and lock them up forever. You will have no habeas corpus. You will have no rights. You will have no right to an attorney, and you will be tried in military courts. And if you're tried in civilian courts, it's because he feels like letting you do it. This is who we're dealing with here. This is President Obama. So watch out for him. You know, I will never vote for this man. And people say, I guess I'm wandering off here, but what the hell. People say, by the way, if you just tuned in to this rant, my name is Mike Fader, and the name of this show is called Occupied Territory, usually devoted, almost always devoted, in fact, to the Occupy movement. And we often have guests on here from various different Occupy groups in different cities, or guests who are experts on certain things like paying down or excusing all of student debt, occupying various buildings, foreclosures, fighting foreclosures. But today I'm more or less kind of going on my own. We did have a guest scheduled, but he's not here. Once again, I will mention, because it doesn't look as if we will have him, but I don't know, that there's a new program, my guest would have been, Malik Rassan, who is the co-host of a new program here to start tomorrow night. That's Thursdays, every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern. It's called Occupy the Hood. And Malik Rassan is the co-founder and co-host of this show. So it'll be tune in tomorrow at 7, and we will find out what the show is all about. So here, it's not just that I'm not just picking on the Republicans. Was I picking? No, because I'm telling you about Obama, too. They're all in the same bed together now. Sometimes it makes you despair, right? You look at the president, and he walks into the Congress, the joint session of Congress. There's the Congress people. There are the senators. There are the hangers-on. There's the Supreme Court people. There's the Speaker of the House behind him. There is the Vice President behind him. Half the people you were looking at last night that were shaking his hand and kissing him, it looks like the Oscars, right? There's so much self-congratulation in that room. If you could actually somehow package it and process it, you could do away with all foreign oil. You could just burn the self-congratulation there that was being emitted in that room. The self-love and the grandiosity and the self-congratulation, it's 10 times worse than the Oscars. You could burn that for fuel, and we wouldn't have to import oil for 10 years. So he's up there, and he's saying everything that he's running for. That was an election speech. That wasn't a state of the union of a public servant to the people he works for. That wasn't the president talking to the citizens of the United States about how he was going to help them out. It was a lot of political campaigning speech. That's all it was. And and what I wanted to mention, too, was, and I've mentioned this before, that half the people you're looking at in that chamber are millionaires, even multimillionaires, even multi-multi-millionaires. Nancy Pelosi, the former Speaker of the House until the 2010 election knocked her off to a minority leader or whatever, she and her husband are worth $70 million. She's married to a banker. $70 million, right? Playing the stock market all the time. And one thing he said last night, because CBS, 60 Minutes, aired this, and that's why he said it. Otherwise, if nobody noticed it, he wouldn't have said a word about it, because what does he care? They're all his rich friends. But he said that one thing he was sure about was, and this was very considered very brave of him, because he was talking to everybody in the Congress, the Senate and the Congress, and both parties, because both parties do this. He said there will be no insider trading. There will be no insider trading anymore. You know, we have to put an end to that. He didn't say exactly how he's going to put an end to it, because there's a law that allows people in Congress, senators and congresspeople, to use insider information to buy and sell stocks and to make huge profits, sometimes tens of thousands, sometimes hundreds of thousands or millions of dollars in profit, on information that you and me, just being regular saps, American citizens, who they allow to vote every couple of years and who pay taxes at a rate twice as much as rich people do, because you and we can't do that. It's against the law for anybody in the whole country, including Wall Street. Every once in a while, you pick up the financial pages. If you pick up the financial section of the New York Times, it's better to call it the crime section. They should just, you know, because on every single front page of the financial section, there is at least, inevitably, every single day, it'll tell you who got indicted, who paid a fine to the federal government for cheating everybody or for poisoning, the ground or something like that. It's the crime pages. There is no difference, in my mind, between big business and organized crime. And there's no difference between our government right now and organized crime. They are all in it together. So meanwhile, there's a law that Congress passed, of course, for itself, that prohibits them from being arrested or prosecuted or charged with a crime if they use insider information to make money. And nobody gets more insider information than members of Congress, because they are, you know, on these committees, finance committees, 20, 30 different kinds of committees that have to do with raising credit card rates, or they're on some health and human services committee where they'll hear some testimony about a new drug that failed or a new drug that's being discovered, and the FDA will come there and give testimony, and Merck or some other company, some huge drug company, will give testimony. They find out about this way before you do and way before the stock market does, even brokers and traders. And they invest, they call up their brokers and they invest money. They call their brokers and they invest money in this. Nancy Pelosi and John Boehner, I know it's Boehner, but Boehner works so much better for me. Nancy Pelosi and John Boehner have made hundreds of thousands of dollars, and she and her husband, Nancy Pelosi, for all I know, have made millions of dollars investing in inside information they got. Now, if you do that, and you're a Wall Street trader and you're a Wall Street broker, and you get inside information about the fact before anybody else does that some drug is finally going to be approved, and you call up everybody, and you heard this confidentially. You're not supposed to know this, but you hear it confidentially, and you spread the word among your major investors, and you start buying on your own behalf, and the stock price and the price of the drug, the company goes way up because they've approved this gigantic new drug. You're in on the ground floor. You buy it for $30 a share. All of a sudden, the company is $180 a share. Make a tremendous amount of money, billions of dollars in profit. But you could get arrested for that. Why is that? Why is that? Because of the common understanding that we used to have in this country, which seems to have almost entirely disappeared, that there should be something called fairness. One of the essential ingredients, one of the core elements of the founding of this country was that there was a conception that there should be something called fairness and equality. Now, of course, there wasn't that much fairness, and God knows there wasn't that much equality in 1776 and 1781. I mean, it just wasn't. And, I mean, women couldn't vote. There was slavery. I mean, you name it. Just go down the list of things, right? Only rich, white, Christian men, you know, had any say over what happened in government, and they ran the government. They owned the country. Not much different than what the Republicans want right now, and what, in fact, generally is the case. Although, now we've got women in there, we've got other religions in there, but still, it's the same thing. You know, a certain upper level of people owns and runs everything. And so what happens is that this is a perpetual thing about America, that the founders of America, Thomas Jefferson in particular, who took ideas from Thomas Paine and from Montesquieu and other people, French philosophers, the essential point here was that having been the victims of a tyrant, of a merciless tyrant, of King George, and using, you know, hired mercenaries and the British army to come over here and bayonet people and shoot people and impose taxes on people and keep people, you know, at the edge of poverty because they wanted to reap tremendous riches for the people that the king appointed. We decided that after that, subject to that much inherited monarchical imperial tyranny, that what we wanted to do is form a country where every citizen, theoretically, you know, obviously it wasn't every citizen, had an equal voice, an equal right to cast their vote, an equal voice in who ran their government, in what their government did, and that their government was answerable to the people of the United States in equality, and that you had that there was a fair starting, like, you know, if they had a race back in 1775, and it was, let's say, it's a mile race, right? What they do, this is just symbolic, obviously, it's a metaphor. The person who King George appointed to run in the race, or the persons he appointed to run in the race, get to start at the half mile. And you start a mile back. They start at the half mile. Well, who's going to win the prize, right? So the whole idea was, no more of this. And it cost a lot of people their lives. There was tremendous loss of lives, and people were wounded, farms were burned, towns were burned, people were locked up, they were hung as traitors. It was a terrible, vicious, violent, no quarter given or asked for war. Went on for 5 years. I think that there's a book, the best book about it is, I think it's called The Glorious Cause. This Glorious Cause or The Glorious Cause. This is a war that went on for 5 years and involved the entire 13 colonies, and it was a massive thing that happened, and people suffered mightily from this. For what? So that we could establish a government free from that kind of tyranny, where just a small group of people don't own everything, where if we vote, our vote is as good as anybody else's vote, and money couldn't buy you. They couldn't buy you, you know, a governor. They couldn't buy you a senator. They couldn't buy you a congressman. This is what we worked so hard for. It's what people died for in this country over and over again. It's why people died on on the beach at Omaha Beach in Normandy when they hit the beach against the Nazis. It's what people died for when they fought Imperial Japan and died for at Iwo Jima. It's what people died for at Lexington and Concord. It's what people got beat up for, locked up for, and died for in countless formations of unions in the late 19th century. People died for this. People spend their lives in jail for this. For what? For the kind of thing that we no longer seem to have. We have gone straight back to a kind of imperial moneyed monarchy, where the richest people in this country, and now it's Citizens United, get to have all the say. They run the agencies. They write the laws. There are pharmaceutical bills that are passed into law. There are oil bills, oil, you know, supplement bills that are passed into law that were actually written by oil companies, written by health insurance companies, written by pharmaceutical companies. And I'm talking about literally writing the law and handing it to the staffers for the committee members on whatever committee was trying to put together the legislation to oversee this industry. The industries wrote the laws. And I don't mean this in a metaphorical way or a symbolic way. They actually wrote the laws, sent them over there, and these laws were amended a little bit, and then passed and signed into law. That's the kind of land we're living in now. We are living in an imperial tyranny of money and of wealth and of arrogance and of power. And that's why the Occupy movement is so important. That's absolutely why the Occupy movement is so important. And that's why the president last night was talking about putting an end to insider trading. And that was supposed to be a brave thing he did. Well, it's not brave. And you know why? So here is Pelosi and Boehner and something like 20, 30, 40 other congressmen and senators have made millions of dollars getting inside information and then calling up their brokers and investing in stocks. That's outrageous. Pelosi and Boehner and all the people that did that should be arrested by the Justice Department and thrown in federal prison. They belong behind bars with the mafia guys, with the people who have stolen cars, who have raped people, who have crossed state lines selling methadrine. They belong in jail, Pelosi and Boehner and all the rest of them. Anybody who took advantage of this inside information, that's where they should be. But they passed a law exempting themselves from that. That's what Obama was talking about last night. But it's easy for him to say that because guess who's got to have to pass the law to make that illegal? Congress. The same people that passed the law to exempt themselves from this crime in the first place. I don't know. I tell you, it's really, it's too much for me. So, you know, I could go into the details here. I have all these things. But basically, you know, this is what's happening. So, once again, let me recommend this book. I think I might stop a little early today. So, we can probably use our theme song a little early out there. We have this book here that I really want to recommend everybody. Once again, Jeffrey D. Clements, get this book. This is something that you will, it's very accessible, it's beautifully written, it's written with great passion. And this guy, Jeffrey Clements, who was a former Assistant Attorney General of Massachusetts and a practicing lawyer, he is also a co-founder of something called Free Speech for People. Go to this website, Free Speech for People. And this is a national nonpartisan campaign to overturn Citizens United and pass the People's Rights Amendment to the Constitution. You see already the effects of Citizens United. Just 2 days ago, a man named Sheldon Adelson, his wife, Dr. somebody or other Adelson, they have billions of dollars. She wrote a check personally for $6 million to Newt Gingrich's PAC, his Political Action Committee. Of course, he has nothing to do with that, but she writes a check. This is how he could beat Romney. I'd just like to see Gingrich and Obama up on this stage. That would be something, right? See who gets voted off the island. Anyhow, Jeffrey D. Clements, Corporations Are Not People is the name of the book. Corporations Are Not People, Why They Have More Rights Than You Do and What to Do About It. The Occupy movement is still alive and well. It's still alive and well. Go to the Occupy Wall Street website. From there, you can get live streaming about actions that are taking place. You can go from there to other sites, and you can participate. Also, you can donate. Donate to Occupy Wall Street or any place you're listening. Donate to your local city or town Occupy group. I guess we'll end with a quote from Thomas Jefferson, who is the great founder. You know, of all the founders of the United States, he is the great founder, the greatest founder of all. He's the intellectual and moral foundation of our country. And Jefferson himself was a relentless critic of the monopolizing of economic power by banks, corporations, and people who put their faith in what he recalled, what he referred to as the selfish spirit of commerce that knows no country and feels no passion or principle but that of gain. That's where we're at now, and you can see it when you watch the president, God forbid, and you can see it when you watch Romney and all those other sharks. Occupy is the answer to this.